real,
real,
relaxed,
relaxed,
but
relaxed,
relevant.
But relevant.
She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
Good morning, good morning. Top of the morning to you. This is Bishop Mary, and I hope that you are well. It is Monday, June the 28th, 2021, and I have a fantastic show for you. So come on, drink your coffee, call somebody, tune in to WWDB here at 8:60 a.m. We are in our new studios. My God, it smells fresh and excited to be here. I'm so grateful for you tuning in to this august show with great guests. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Davis, Senior Executive Vice President with the National Hockey League. We're proud of the wonderful efforts of our new partners at the Community Healing Project for All to provide community healing, especially to our young people. In addition to providing a free educational resource to children with our in-home and in-school STEM curriculum called Future Goals, we are excited about the communication tools called Healing Posters. We hope that every time a child sees these wonderful signs in a window, they are reminded that they are loved, valued, and have great purpose. So join us by calling or texting 833-722-4748 and leaving your contact information. Together, we can work to battle our children's many challenges to education and bring a message of hope. This is Love by Lionel Richie and the Commodores. Good morning. And I'm excited because live in the studio with me right now is Dennis and Lee. Or should I say Lee and Dennis? That's right. Who's the older?
I'm the oldest. Lee.
Okay, so Lee was going L before D.
Bishop, where are we going with this now?
You take no time.
This thing is going sideways already because, you know, it's clear he's my oldest brother.
He has a real issue with
you
that.
Know, he's my oldest sibling. He's not, you know, it would probably be one thing if he was, right maybe a year or two. But I got other siblings in between us.
I got to bring that out before he.
Do we need to call your therapist or
yeah,
we okay?
Might need to. Maybe that's so. That's a complex there. Don't ask us who's the oldest.
I'm firstborn, I understand.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm
oldest,
okay with it.
I'm the oldest 5 years.
That's not fair. That's not fair.
I'm firstborn.
I'm middle.
I'm not embarrassed by that at all. I'm thrilled about it.
Sounds like a complex here, bro.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. There's a complex.
You gotta go with this somewhere.
And that's a healthy complex.
It's a healthy one. Okay. That's right. Because the older are always looking out for the younger. We say. Right?
Wait a minute. See,
here's
the thing.
There we go.
So,
all right.
Okay. We better go to your show.
Okay.
We'll be about 4 hours.
You're right about that debating and.
But I'm excited to have both Lee and Dennis, Dennis and Lee Horton here with me. They are longtime friends. We worked, shall I say, together on several projects
yes.
in a gated community.
In a gated community.
Very beautiful.
A very beautiful community. Yes, SCN Chester, where I started there when it first opened. And they came a few years later, and we immediately formed a partnership and trying to really help change the mindsets of the prisoners there. And they were involved in quite a few projects that were extremely successful. And so first of all, I just want them to give a little bit of background for the next 2 minutes of how they even got to this particular situation. And then we'll go on and talk about inside the institution and now what they're going to be doing because they were blessed to be released earlier this year. Woo-hoo! I was so excited when I got the call from his sister. I literally screamed. I forgot I was on a Zoom call. And everybody was wondering what was going on. And I said, oh, man, my boys, they got it out. You know, and nobody understood because it wasn't about that topic. But I really just screamed and cried because it's been a long time coming. And particularly Dennis and I, we talked, I don't know, 3-4 years about this day coming. And so it's always great when you hold on to the faith. And even, and I'll say this and let them talk. I remember there was one time where Dennis said to me, I don't know if this is ever going to happen. And I said to him, the story is not over. You just have to hold on. There are things happening that are going to eventually be a benefit, and I'm going to do all I can to try and help that to happen. So I'm grateful that they held on and that they are before me, looking stellar this morning, bright and shiny and all. And we thank God for them. So y'all want to give as brief as you can how you got arrested and then your experience behind bars so that people can kind of get a context of what it is and the impact of being free.
Well, I mean, I could start off, I could say like 28 years ago, on May 31st, 1993, my brother and I were arrested and we went to, you know, trial for murder. And, you know, it was a murder that we actually didn't commit. So we wound up spending 28 years in prison for a crime we didn't commit. But during that time, what we decided to do was to make the best out of the time while we was in prison. We didn't know whether or not we was going to actually get out of prison. Because, you know, in Pennsylvania, whether you know or not, if you get sentenced to life, we were convicted and sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Now, just think about that. We didn't commit the crime. Murder happens, you know. Based on the people we were around, the neighborhood we grew up in, we just got swept up into something that didn't have anything to do with us. Mm-hmm. Well, we wind up going to prison. The person who committed the crime wind up home. that's the irony of it. He was home walking around in the streets. Wow. We're in prison doing all this time. And, you know, we could either allow the time, you know, to overcome us or, you know, we could just do this time and do the best we can while we're here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but we were supposed to die in prison because life in Pennsylvania is without the possibility of parole. Your natural entire life, you die in prison in every situation. So we didn't see ourselves actually coming home. You know, we was fighting and we was trying and we was pushing and, you know, we wasn't making no headway. And then, you know, in round 2017, somebody suggested we file an application for commutation. And that's what we did. We filed an application for commutation, and then that became a fight. Till we had to fight through that. And, you know, our case was the first application, actual innocence application for commutation to go to the Board of Pardons. Mm. And so it was different for them. And so we went there, we proved our point, and to make a long story short, you know, we had some folks to come on board, you know, Bishop Mary, Archbishop Mary Palmer, she was one of them to support us, you know. Person, you know, right now, you know, on the Board of Pardons, we had John Fetterman, the Lieutenant Governor. He supported us. You know, we had a lot of politicians in the city who supported us. And, you know, at the end of the day, we wound up coming out. We wound up coming home. It was an achievement. Like they said, the impossible task was achieved. 28
years.
You know, only, when they say God is good, that's the truth. Because we wouldn't have made it out. You know what I mean? It was a hard fought fight. And, you know, my brother and I, and just to say this before I let my brother say a few things, my brother and I stayed together for the entire time we was in prison.
That was God right there.
Just imagine that. Mm-hmm. We went to prison, and he's my younger brother. And, you know, now I got to have him with me, and I got to have everybody saying with me, why is your younger brother with you? But we stayed together from the day we went in to the day we came out. Mm-hmm.
we were in the same cell. You know, so you have to say it was an angel on our shoulder watching over us because we stayed in the same cell. Mm-hmm. We stayed together. And we wind up being productive individuals in there. We wind up, while we were in prison, doing some things that people in society wasn't doing. And still haven't done to this day, you know, if people are trying to figure out how we accomplished so much while we were incarcerated.
So good morning, everyone. This is Dennis. You know, with that said from Lee, I just want to, I guess, get in by just saying that what people mean for bad, God means for good. And that's real. Wow. Because, you know, we thought we were definitely in the wilderness. We didn't know, you know what I mean, which way to go, you know, what to do. I mean, this was a whole new world to us. But, you know, when we got in this world, you know, slowly through time, we begin to figure it out, you know, and we begin to realize that, you know, we can sit here, we can boohoo, we can complain, we can be angry, you know, but we chose to seize the moment and just, you know, accept it for what it was at that moment because, you know, we were in the storm and we had to figure out how were we going to operate within this storm. So, you know, we chose to just, you know, in time, you know, and I'm a firm believer in Jesus Christ, and he kind of just slowed everything down. Like everything else was moving in fast motion, but we were moving slow and we can see everything around us that were happening. And so he kind of, like, just took us through this thing slowly and what to do, the do's and what not to do's. And you know what I mean? And we were just fortunate. And we started making wonderful decisions and, you know, getting involved in programming and, you know, educating ourselves, just taking a full advantage of every opportunity that availed itself to us, you know what I mean? And just creating better, you know, just trying to create better people, you know, within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did, and you know, and then we just got involved, and we just, you know, the old saying, you know, everything you touch, you change, and everything you touch changes you, and we begin to change a lot of things around us for the better, and things changed us for the better, and that was kind of like our, you know, our march, you know, towards, you know, freedom and just better, just being better, doing better, you know what I mean? Mm. So.
Absolutely. So how many facilities in the state have you all been?
Well, I think we've been in probably about four?
Yeah.
About four, I think. Camp Hill, Greater Ford, Mahanoy,
and Chester.
Chester, you were at Mahanoy.
Yeah, okay. The SCI Mahanoy. Yeah, that was, we spent 17 years at the SCI Mahanoy.
Yeah. I, of course, I always call him Shots, but he came from Chester to Mahanoy.
Right, we know him well.
He came back. Right. So I've been at the chapel service.
Yes, he did. Great singer. Yep. Another individual, you know what I mean, served enough time. He should be home. Why is he still in prison? You know, this man's been in prison almost 40-something years. It's crazy.
He's
a wonderful individual.
Somehow I had to get him to think about the commutation as well.
Right. I think he's in the mix of that right now.
He is in it?
Yeah, I think he's in the mix of that right now.
But the thing is this, and I know this is not about commutation, so much about commutation or about, you know, life as Bill or any of those things like that. But, you know, it's just so many men and women that's been in prison for 30, 40, 50 years that are doing wonderful work inside prison. These are lifers, you know, that will never get the opportunity to come home if we don't change the laws and how we are in prison and, you know, people, you know, and they do a lot of wonderful work on the inside, and, you know, many of them are deserving of a second chance. You know, we got to figure out how do we do that, you know, in our society, you know.
I'm grateful that you're saying that because there are some laws on the books that we're hoping our legislators here, particularly in Pennsylvania, will consider and push for. And naturally, of course, I'm hoping that we'll be able to have a really robust conversation about the law. I want to be able to bring you guys back and others to talk about that particular law and those laws that we need
support. We would love to.
From the House of Representatives as well as the Senate. And I am working on a show for that. Outside of that, what were some of the things you were involved in that could help, that helped to change, as you said, Dennis? Things you touch change. So what were some of the things? I'm familiar with some of the things that you did at Chester, and I heard about what you were doing at Mount Hanoi. So if you wouldn't mind sharing one or two of your best projects that you got the guys involved in that really impacted them.
Well, at first, I would be remiss if I don't say that, you know, we don't owe our, you know, successes in prison to ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to start from the very beginning. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but my grandma, like he said, we used to complain a lot when we first got to prison. We wasn't supposed to be in prison. Why would we be, you know, we didn't like it. It was a bad situation. We get these visits, and all we do is complain. And my grandma slapped us up the head and said, boy, stop complaining. You know what I mean? You're still here.
This was very
you're
early
here,
on.
You have an opportunity. Very early on, she said, if you're here, you have an opportunity. And every day is an opportunity for you to do something different. And you can do something better for yourself.
Ain't nothing like grandma's.
Like grandma. She said, if you want to do something, do anything before you die, help somebody while you're here. And that let us, put us on that pathway. And like I said, we always had angels on our shoulders. And so, you know, it led up to, you know, getting to SEI Chester. And, you know, but first we educated ourselves. We realized that we had to educate ourselves. So we took advantage of every opportunity. Our thing was, while we was in prison, we knew we wasn't supposed to be there, but our revenge was to get something out of it and to try to help as many guys as we could, you know, so that when people went home, they didn't have to come back to prison.
That's right.
We wanted to send guys home so they didn't come back to prison.
That's
that
right.
was what we found is to be our purpose in prison. So we thought if we died in prison, we at least we had a purpose. And we was going to serve our community by trying to send as many men home as possible who would go home, do the right thing, and wouldn't come back to prison. Now, when we get to Chester, we started a group called Compass, Community of Men Promoting a Safer Society. And through that group, which all of the guys in the group except for one are home now, and I would want to say that the guy who really kind of initiated it, he just received commutation recommended to the governor's desk on Friday. So
Yay!
He will be coming home. So all the guys that we were good guys, they were all about positivity and things like that, all had life sentences. But we wanted to fill the gaps in where we saw the institution was not doing what it should be doing. And that led us to a lot of different programs. But what we did, though, we created a program called, we didn't create the Dare Responsibility, but we created Chester's first Dare Responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And through that program, what happened was the deputy superintendent said, I'm going to let y'all do this, but it has to be different than any other thing, that in any other institution.
That's right.
So y'all have to come with something unique in order to be able to have a Dare Responsibility here. And what we did was my brother and I began writing plays. And we wrote a play, and they let us put on a full production.
Yep.
And the first one was a play, and then we would have workshops. And in the workshops, each play would be about the impact of crime or something going on in the community. And then we would have workshops to try to understand what we saw in the play. And that was wildly successful.
All right, Professor.
Yes. And
I was there.
Right.
So, that's right.
Yeah, and, you know, we definitely, it really was all about just, you know, it became a rehabilitative apparatus. How can we, you know, how can we do this? How can we do these plays in ways that can, you know what I mean, that can touch, help, you know, bring hope, healing, you know what I mean, you know, change. And, you know, we became quite successful at it. You know, the men loved it. You know, it kind of challenged them in a lot of ways, you know. And, you know, we pretty much put most of these plays, we put, you know, our experiences, you know, over the years, you know what I mean? And they can just identify with it. And and you know, they loved it, you know.
And our second thing, you know, we did a lot of things. It's too much, like you said, too much to go over right here. But the second thing we did, second project was the Crime Victims Awareness Conference. We started an annual Crime Victims Awareness Conference because
yes,
we had
powerful.
To think about the victims. And, you know, I like this. I'm glad to say that, you know, Archbishop Mary Palm was our first, you know, keynote speaker.
Yes.
She was the first one we invited in. She was the first keynote speaker.
Yes.
And that gave us a foundation in order to stand on. And every year after that, we had a Crime Victims Awareness
That's
Conference.
Right.
And we brought in deans of colleges and professors and, you know,
students,
organizations, you know,
politicians,
like Ceasefire and, you know, politicians. People came to see this. And we were, and how it worked was, you know, we talked about the victims of crimes because you can't leave them out, you know. And we talked about the victims and how can what can we do to change what's going on? Because for us, being in prison, being innocent, we was like neutral in the middle. We could see both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. We seen these brothers who were in prison and these others who were in prison who had reformed themselves and should be released. But we also saw the side of the families and people who would lose loved ones. And we were thinking, how could we bring these two sides together to try to start healing and, you know,
there
to
you
try
go.
To initiate some healing That's in the community. Right. Because if you don't heal a community, you know, the wound is just going to fester. It's just going to rot. And then what you have, gangrene. And that's what we see in the community right now. It's like gangrene, the violence, everything that's going on. There's no healing going on. And that's what we need. And that's what we is trying to do in prison. And, you know, but the Crime Victims Awareness Conference, that's what that was designed to achieve. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as we could in prison. I mean, you know, we're in prison, so, you know, although they allow us to do some things, we don't have freedom just to do what we want to do. Mm-hmm. So,
and I just want to touch on and just basically, I mean, you know, like Lee said, I mean, one person is a victim, we all are victims. And that's how we got to see it. And the thing about it is, it didn't become more evident than, you know, because individuals that were incarcerated would lose family members, you know, brothers, you know, sisters, you know, mothers to violence. So, I mean, are they victims? Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? So,
that's
you
right.
Know, and when we begin to have that conversation in that way, then I think you begin to look, you expand how you view victim. You know what I mean? It's no longer just them over there. Mm-hmm. It's all of us. You know what I mean? And I think that's how things, you know, can begin to change when we look at ourselves as victims. If Doc, if you a victim, then I'm a victim. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, if Archbishop Palmer a victim, then I'm a victim.
That's good.
You know what I mean? And I think when we look at it like that, then I think we can, you know, I think we can begin to heal, begin to, you know what I mean, you know, stop a lot of the violence.
Even now, and you guys have a bird's eye view, hearing what's going on in the city recently, we lost a 10-year-old who accidentally shot himself. That's a whole nother topic about gun control and gun safety. But there are so many the rest of the weekend that were just shot, 17, 16-year-olds, 18-year-olds. Would you mind just saying, because you've talked to the guys on the inside, the ones who are sort of like, you can tell they're really what they are, the mindset. Yeah, because of my aunt, I got 3 drops. You know what I mean? What? You know, and they kind of proud about it. And maybe 60 seconds, each of you can say, from having maybe met someone like that, what could we do? And you just did the good stuff from the inside. Mm-hmm. But what can society do to kind of, some kind of way, what do you think is the beginning, the ending, the impact for them to result to end up being maybe a killer, maybe a menace to society, and hoping to get out and do it again?
Well, I mean, I could say this, and you said 60 seconds, so I'm going to try to keep it brief.
Okay.
Because I talk a lot sometimes. But I think in prison, we were fully present with love. And a lot of these brothers that was coming in, they didn't have fathers. They didn't have people to embrace them. They didn't have people to guide them. They didn't have people to sit them down and say what they were doing was wrong. Because they're just following a trend. Violence in the community right now is just a trend. You know,
wow.
I mean, everybody's doing it. I'm going to do it too. You know, if I don't do it, then somebody's going to take advantage of me. And, you know, they're hyper on this pride and this ego thing. You know, the generation today, they worry a lot about what other people think about them. But we were fully present with love. We were present in their lives in prison. So when they came through the door, we grabbed them up. And we didn't let them do the things that they was doing out here. You know, we took them and was like, you know, we saw them get ready to do something. Yo, you ain't going to do that. Come on, you over here. Get over here. We didn't accept it. We looked at them as being our younger brothers.
Okay, but leaders.
You know, as our sons. You know what I'm saying? And we treated them as brothers and sons. We didn't treat them like they were on our level. I always say, you either the teacher or you the student. You know, if you're on their level, then you students with them then. You know, we were teachers. And that's what we wanted to do, teach them. They didn't have those torchbearers that passed them the torch. So we're here to show you how to live. You know, people, most of them don't know how to live. And if you don't examine, like, coming out of this trauma, a lot of them come out of trauma in their lives, and they don't know how to deal with it. This pain on top of pain on top of pain. So, you know the saying, hurt people hurt people.
That's right.
And
that's right.
So that's what they're doing. A lot of people in our communities are hurt. and they don't know how to do anything else but hurt people.
And, you know, Lee touched on a lot, and he's right on point. And, you know, to coincide with that, we had to give him hope. We had to inspire him. You know what I mean? And to help them to see something better than, you know, what they were used to, than all the trauma and all the pain. You know what I mean? You know, we had to, you know, help them and visualize their lives in ways, you know, that's practical but achievable. You know what I'm saying? And right there at their fingertips. And they had, you know, we had to make them, help them to believe that they can do these things, mm-hmm. you know. And sometimes it comes one step at a time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really missing in the communities out there. Mm-hmm. In our community right now, you know, when you see a lot of, you know, violence, a lot of attitude that I don't care, is because those two ingredients is missing, love and hope. And you know what I mean? And the thing about it is, we may need a whole new show, you know, to talk about it, but we came up with a strategy, you know, right along with Archbishop Palmer.
Oh, so now you're taking over. You want your own show.
We need.
You know, this is our friend. We go back.
Right,
this ain't
right.
Like, this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Johnny lately come to this thing. Let's get down and dirty. And really, let's talk.
Yeah.
Talk about balance.
But he's right. You know, we put together a strategy called the Sea United to respond effectively to stop the violence in Philadelphia and Chester. And we sent it out to every politician in the city, a lot of organizations, you know, in Chester and Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Both mayors.
Faith-based.
The city councils, the prosecutor's offices. Mm-hmm. You know, we sent this out to them. And this was because the men in prison know how to stop this. You should be talking to them.
I'm sorry, Archbishop Palmer, and I'm not throwing, our police chief outlaw under the bus, but we sent it to her as well. Nobody got back to us.
We
not a response. All right. So what we're going to do is, because I want to bring you guys on the back end when we talk about the violence piece, and I'm grateful if you don't mind here. I'm going to shift right now to our next guest, Councilwoman Helen Kim, who's in. We're going to hear a little bit of this song by Meek Mills.
Ooh. There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish at the roaring and tossing of the sea. People will faint from terror, apprehensive of what will come of the world. When these things begin to take place, stand up and lift your heads, because your redemption is coming.
And that is the intro song for our council member at large, Helen Kim. Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Good morning, Archbishop. Wonderful to join you.
I'm so grateful that you suggested that song. I had never heard it, but I listened to it several times this morning, and I thought, wow, Meek Mills with Justin Timberlake. That's a righteous song. And you said it's one of your favorite, and I guess it speaks to your experience in now being a council member here for the city of Philadelphia.
Yes, thank you so much.
I guess we might as well get right to it. Last week you were at the state capitol in Harrisburg and was entering into the Senate chambers, and there seems to have been an incident that led to you getting arrested along with some other leaders regarding the education for our children here in the city of Philadelphia. Would you like to share briefly about how that all transpired?
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, Archbishop. So, you know, I've been doing education work for the last two decades. It's actually what brought me into city council. Right now, the Harrisburg legislature, when we went in, was sitting on $10 billion of surplus money. And, you know, with the state of our schools that they're in, with, you know, schools not being able to open because we don't have air conditioning, asbestos, mold, and lead, the continued underfunding of young people and disinvestment in communities and families, you know, we felt like we had to go up there. So Power Interfaith organized a two-mile walk on Monday between West Philadelphia and Montgomery County, two elementary schools that were just 2 miles apart in distance, but a world apart in terms of equity and resources. And then on Wednesday, they organized a visit to the Harrisburg Capitol. We visited different offices, many of which were locked. And then we proceeded to go to the Senate chambers, where it's a public session. We went to the Senate gallery, which is public. That's where the public's supposed to enter. And, to observe what was happening. And then they locked the doors as soon as we came onto the floor. Just walking up the stairs, all the doors were locked. The House chambers remained open, which was right across the hall, notably. But the Senate chambers were locked as soon as we arrived. And it was clearly purposeful. There were about 40 or 50 members of clergy. There were parents, there were educators, there were community members who were there to say that when you've got $10 billion on the table, the care and keeping of children has to be your number one priority. Mm. And so they locked the doors, so we decided that we weren't really going to be moved by that. So we sat down, we chanted, "Let the people in." Wanted to make sure that the Senate heard that the public was being locked out. Members of the public left the public gallery, so making it clear that it had been opened to others. And then they did a bullhorn and announced that there would be arrests, for which we didn't really understand the point of. And then they arrested 15 of us, including Bishop Dwayne Royster, Pastor Nick O'Rourke of Living Water, Pastor Jay Broadnax from Mount Pisgah AME, Rabbi Mordecai Liebling, and a number of others. So, that we felt like it was this important, and that the attention needs to be on Harrisburg right now, which has curtailed voting rights, has failed to take action on policing, is singularly responsible for the underfunding of our schools. And with $10 billion, there's no excuse.
Wow. And so, that most people will always have a spin to the story. And I'm not one who always believes in that, but I know your passion because I'm familiar with your work, particularly with education, so that the pipeline to prison for our young children isn't continuing. My earlier guests who are still here in the studio with me were recently commuted after 28 years of serving for a crime they did not commit. And the one thing that they kept saying in their prior theme of was that they educated themselves. So what I'm hearing from you is the necessity that this money, $10 billion that the state has, it really should be filtered down, particularly to the Philadelphia school system, which is not necessarily at the top of its game, so that our children will not become frustrated and end up in a place where these two fine gentlemen were recently released from. Mm-hmm. And what can we as a public do to ensure that they hear our voice? I mean, clearly you went all the way to getting arrested, you and others. But beyond that, what else can the public do? Who say that we care about our kids and their education do?
I've been doing this work for a long time, and it's really complicated. And both your previous guest, myself, you who are on these different ends of institutional systems are so often defined by inequity, racism, and most definitely injustice, are also reflective of our culture and our society. On the front end, you have, you know, schools. That's been my complete investment. Like I said, I'm a former public school teacher. I'm a, you know, mom who raised three kids in the systems. You know, I've started a parent organizing group, a newspaper, started a school. Like, I'm trying to understand the system in all of its complicated ways. And on the end that you and I have connected on, Archbishop, which has been largely around our prison system and the inhumanity that defines that, the cruelty, the, you know, the neglect and the underfunding that happens on all ends that leads to basically the denial of humanity of people. That all of that, I feel, is just very closely tied together. And it's complicated. What you're asking, like, how can individuals overthrow a system that has been built into place for decades and in some cases, you know, since the beginning of our country's founding? And I would say that, you know, one of the reasons why I went into politics at the local level, not, you know, I'm not interested really in politics in terms of like a pursuit of like different titles, you know, like to go out and beyond. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in politics as a vehicle for change. And at the local level, we don't have a vision for ourselves. That is the one thing that I feel so strongly. So a lot of my work has been around supporting self-determination, voice, and visibility for communities all across the city of Philadelphia. That started with, you know, immigrant communities. Some of us aren't even citizens. Some of us don't speak English. We are going to find a way to make ourselves heard nonetheless and have a local vision for ourselves. That same thing needs to be in play right now for our schools. The state is a complicated entity. By the time you get there, there are many, many different factors that have gone in. And of course, you're going into a place where you know, we are widely outnumbered. They have very few people of they don't nearly have enough people of color. They don't nearly have enough women. They don't nearly have enough people who reflect the experiences of communities. So my interest has been in staying super local. So if people are passionate about the issue of education, then I would say stay hyper local. Stay in close touch with your schools. Get to know why they're so complicated. Yeah. Try to find openings. Build out a parent voice and a community voice and a youth voice in particular. There can be gains that happen along the way. This is not a story of defeat and impotence and helplessness, right? This is a story of agency. And the more active we are, the more clear we are about what we want, then more doors will open and things will become more possible. I think what happened at the state level, the state ended up passing a budget that gave about $300 million to schools statewide. And to be clear, they hadn't given any money last year because we were all like in austerity and all the finances were plummeting and bottoming out. So, you know, right now, though, there is a new vision that must be set. And we are not going back to the old ways, but that requires us to be more engaged. And I think your previous guests were very clear. There needs to be a new vision for what this city and for what people need to do. It's not defined yet, so I can't give you a playbook. You know, I can just say the more engaged and involved you are, the more people that you call who will say, I'll be there tomorrow if you ask me to, the more powerful we become.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I think power, which has dozens, if not, you know, 100+ faith communities all over the city of Philadelphia and across the state of Pennsylvania. If you're part of a power congregation, you probably know it.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, Black clergy has been incredibly wonderful under the leadership of Reverend Collier, you know, in being engaged on the school's issues. So there are multiple outlets, but there's no question we need to get louder.
Well, Council Member Gim, thank you so much. I know you've had a hard and robust schedule as a council person in passing our own city budget. But if folks want to reach out to you, can they call your office to continue the conversation regarding this important matter?
Absolutely. Our phone number is 215-686-3420. That's 215-686-3420. We've been open through, you know, the whole year. People can also email us at info@helengymgym.com. And, you know, we're happy to hear what people have to say and where they think we should be going.
Well, we certainly will keep an eye on this, and if needed, we'll call you back. And I hope that you'll return to the Bishop Mary Show. Thank you so much this morning. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Archbishop.
Musical selection played by Dr. Austin Woodland, my friend. Man, that brother makes no sense when his fingers hit the keyboards. I'm telling you, organ, piano, anything his mind can get to. Doctor, how are you?
Good morning, Bishop. I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
I know you are saddled with the little ones, and they are quite active, so I will not hold you long. But you got cut out last week on the show, and I can't do that to one of my homies, because whenever I call you, you are like, how can I serve you, Bishop? And I take that seriously. So would you mind just, you know, quickly telling everybody what brought you to really love the passion of the art of music?
Wow, I have been around music, Bishop, my entire life, and I grew up in the church, so
you ain't nothing but music, doc.
You know, that's all we heard, you know, and from the womb.
I know, that's right.
Got my musical footing at Shiloh Apostolic Temple in North Philadelphia.
15th and Master.
Where, yes.
All right, doc. Where, now I know where you get that Pentecostal flair. Go ahead.
That's it, Bishop. That's it.
Wow.
And, one of the organists became one of my first mentors, and I sat under him and played for his choir. Not really playing then, more so learning under him and doing what you might call auxiliary keyboards behind him, and just playing other sounds like strings and horns with one finger at 8, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Wow.
Just kind of getting into how to play with a band and all of that. At a very early age, it gave me a really good, at least elementary, understanding of what it takes. And so a lot of the gospel foundation that I had started very young. And I did branch out to other genres. Mm-hmm. And most people do know me for gospel. Mm-hmm. But I pretty much went from there to being in a jazz band at 12 and doing school events and my schools, playing for those, and going to play for my college's choir and other community choirs, local and national church organizations, and on to production and so on and so forth. And the journey has been very interesting, very rewarding, and I just thank God for the ability to serve musically.
And so you graduated from the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So that's no small feat. As an African-American man, I know there was some experiences. You'll probably have to come back and talk about the college life on that one. But you also had the minister of music at Enon.
Yes, ma'am. I would say music director.
Music director. Let me get that right.
They're not the same.
They're not the same. That's
things.
Right. Let me get that corrected, because I don't want doctor to get me.
I do service minister music for Pentecostal Bridegroom Temple in Germantown, as well as music director at Enon Tabernacle.
Wow. And you are also part of the Enon Music Group.
Yes.
And so you have a couple of our my previous guests who are part of Enon, Zach Williams and Vanessa Howard. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, but you have definitely put your flair in it when it comes to music. So in about 60 seconds, why is it necessary for us to have music as an outlet for our children?
Wow. And that goes into actually teaching. As I do have a virtual music academy that has been going for a little over a year since we got this virtual thing going, but you said 60 seconds. So music is one of the only things that reaches directly to your emotions and your subconscious. Mm. I don't care how old you are, you learn your alphabet because of a song. And you listen to things that get in your mind and you don't even know that they're there.
Wow.
And so music is important because it's how we learn and it's also how we express. Mm. In church and in gospel is how we express to God and to ourselves. And music was created by God and we believe for God also as he created instruments for praising his name. And so we want to use that as an outlet for, people that, and for ourselves, whoever needs the, an outlet. It's important to have an outlet, whatever it may be. And so just simple as that, if that's all you learn music for as a child, it can bless your entire life. There are disciplines in music that you, some things that you don't get anywhere else. Sports is very similar,
mm-hmm.
and I've done both. But there's a level of discipline that it takes to play music that influences everything you do.
That's right. That's right. I went through Settlement Music School, so I'll leave that right there. My piano teacher was Miss Beck, and she was a German woman who had a ruler. And every time I missed a note on my scales, crack, start again. I mean, back then they could do that. Now you might, that's a whole nother level. But anyhow, I do understand about the discipline part of it. So if someone wants to become part of a student for your virtual music academy, how would they reach out to you?
You can go to, it's called Every Key Lessons, and our portal is www.everykeystudents.com. You can go there, click sign up, and we have organ, bass, piano, woodwinds and brass, guitar and vocal instruction.
Okay, I think that's pretty much the whole orchestra. You're not missing much on anything, but I do want to say that personally, I'm so very proud of you. You're now Dr. Austin Woodland. You are the premier, and I say this notwithstanding, but for a young African-American man to be as prominent as you are with the humility that you have, it's just amazing to me. And I'm certain that God is going to move you in such a way that it's going to highlight the skill, not just the skill, but the talent as well as the impact on so many, many more lives. And so, my friend, I'm grateful for you. And I'm hoping that we're going to be able to do a whole music show where you can bring some of the Enon Music Group together and we can talk about music producing and directing for those that are listening. I certainly hope you'll afford me that opportunity.
Awesome. We would love to. Just call us and we'll be there, Richard.
Yeah, I know that's right. I thank you. Now go take care of them babies. I don't want the wifey upset, all right? God bless you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you. God bless.
Hundreds of shooting incidents and multiple victims. Homicides that were senseless, cold, intentional, killing our men, women,
and children in the African American communities. The question is, am I my brother or sister's keeper? Have we considered each other as neighbors? We can wait for someone to come in and save us, or we can save ourselves. The violence must end. Do your part.
A spirit lifter, problem fixer, words of reason, there when you need them, calm you down, set you straight. Yeah, I appreciate all the little life lessons, but you never expected. A thank you, a pat on the back, you did what you did, no questions asked. I could never say enough. And the ups, you carried the weight so we'd have a good life. Raised us with love so we could fly. Anyone else would call you Superman, but I just call you Dad.
And I brought that in. I just call you Dad. And I was thinking about that because, of course, June, last week we celebrated Father's Day and we didn't get a chance to play that, but it is a beautiful song. And when I heard it, I thought of what you said, Lee, how you became teachers. And for some of those young men, you were a dad figure that they might not have ever had. And that is so impactful, particularly leading toward violence. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, that is most definitely. And the thing is, they knew I was there, that I would, whatever they were going through, I was going to help, I was going to fight with them to overcome it, whether it was against, whether they was going something against the administration. I try to figure out how we can get in there and be a middle ground to try to prevent them from going to the hole or something like that, or if it was with their family, or if it was something they was going through inside the prison. I mean, we've interceded on many situations where individuals came to prison, they were scared, they didn't know what to do, they got into a situation, and we got them out of it. And it wasn't about, you know, give me something for it.
Right.
They knew we were legitimately, genuinely there to help them. And I think that when they know that, people want people. Nobody wants to be in the streets running around doing the things a lot of these people are doing. A lot of the young folks are doing right now. They want change. They just don't know how to change. They don't know how to get out of it. And that's what a lot of young guys told us. How do I get out of this? How do I hear what you're saying, but how do I be the guy that you're telling me to be with, when I'm in this situation? I'm not 50. I'm 25. I'm 19. I'm
right.
a 19-year-old young man out in the street with other 19-year-olds. Just because I'm changing, they don't change.
That's right.
And so how do you get me to change and to get me in that position where I can change and be safe? Because I don't feel safe when I'm a good guy and everybody else around me, I think, are bad guys. So we have to look at those things. But I think when you fight for them, you know, and we were in prison and we made prison, if you can even check, anybody can check, Pennsylvania became some of the, is among the safest prisons in the country. Why? Because you have a lot of the men who are in prison,
right,
who know, who reformed themselves, who were 30 years ago the same young guy.
Right.
And they've changed and they've contributed to their community, and now they want to help to change some of these young guys' minds, and they know what to do.
Exactly. And I'm sure that your dad was happy when you guys came out.
Oh, he was ecstatic.
Yes, he was overjoyed. He still is overjoyed. He still calls us every single day.
Every single day.
You know, if we're working so hard, we, you know, I don't get a chance to call him that day. Oh, I hear it. You better believe it.
He said, what you got to go back to jail to give you my 15 minutes?
Yeah. You know. But I just want to, if I can, I just want to comment on, you know, what Lee had to say just briefly. The thing is this, you know, we got to approach the violent problem the same way we approached the opioid crisis.
Okay.
This is an American problem. This is not just black folks' problem. This is all our problem. This is all our children.
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying? This is Americans' children.
That's right.
And as long as we keep looking at it as through the lens of, is them over there or them over there? No, this is you know, we all are Americans. And this solution to violence, first of all, we can't lock our way out of it. We tried that for decades and decades and decades, and it hasn't worked. Not going to work.
That's right. You know what I mean?
We gotta approach this collectively as an American community, and that's the way how we solve it. All hands on deck. The same way we approach the opioid crisis.
And so, to that point, the Community Healing Project for All is willing to do what it can. Dr. Thompson is our executive director, and he can speak to that. Real quickly, time's a ticking. I'm getting my notes from my wonderful engineer, and I don't want him getting no trouble. But just speaking about that, go ahead, Doc.
They had to come back.
They have a show today
covering violence. Community Healing Project for All, what we do is we're promoting healing in the community. And so you touched on so many things, the trends, kids follow trends, and that they need hope. And that's what we're attempting to provide. A new partnership we've got formed that helps to put in, equip mothers with a tool. What can they do? Our children a tool, right. Our healing posters. Put that in the sign in the window, not my child, not my block, let the healing begin. Kids go through the block and they see on the signs and know that they're loved. And one, we've got NHL is on board, ShopRite, Jeff Brown, NAACP, Catherine Hicks, a lot of people coming on board. So I think we're getting to the point, and there's other great programs out there where we're focusing that energy where it needs to be. And so we're just real excited. And you'll be hearing more about that to come, and excited to have you guys.
Certainly hoping you guys will come back in short date to be able to come. We want to continue talking, particularly about the proposal you made.
Right.
And want to hear more about that and see if I can't get the legislators in here too. And it'll be a whole show, entire show, centered around that, if that's all right with you.
And about what we're doing now.
All right, and what you're doing now. All right, we'll include that. Well, y'all, I must sign off. I'm grateful for all of you that are here. Please be well, be safe, and be careful. Looking forward to the next Bishop Mary Show. Check out my podcast, and I hope that you will be all right. Until next time, this is Bishop signing off.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.